welcome to the Parrot Care Sessions, produced by Talking Naturally, exclusively for the World Parrot Trust. This is a series of in-depth conversations with leading experts, helping you to discover better ways to live with and care for your feathered friends. Hello, today on the Parrot Care Sessions, I'm joined by Dr. Scott Eccles, a board-certified avian veterinary specialist, adjunct professor at Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine, a past president for the Association for Avian Veterinarians, a frequent lecturer at multiple universities and conferences in the US and abroad, as well as being an author and filmmaker. His forays into filmmaking led him to establish Avian Studios, where he creates educational media that help teach people about the changes they can make to improve and enrich the lives of their companion parrots. Go to avianstudios.com for videos, blogs, and other information on bird care and interesting avian topics. Clients coming to Dr. Eccles' veterinary clinic often want to discuss grooming of the wings, feet, and beak of their birds. They would like information on proper techniques, what is necessary versus what are personal preferences, and what the confident pet owner can do for themselves versus what should only be done by a qualified professional. All important topics, of course, so it's these and other areas related to grooming that we'll be covering in this podcast. Dr. Eccles, Scott, good morning and welcome once again to the Parrot Care Sessions.
Hi, Charlie. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you, and very much looking forward to talking with you again.
Well, thank you, and same to you.
Scott, before we get into the details, could you explain what grooming is and why it's something that parrot caregivers need to consider?
Grooming encompasses three, maybe four different areas of external body care. So that's primarily beak care, wing care, you could say feather care, and then also nail care. And then the fourth one I think people should throw in would be bathing. So, you know, just kind of whole body grooming, if you will.
And we have actually discussed bathing in another Parrot Care Sessions podcast, which you can find right here on the World Parrot Trust website.
Great.
So, Scott, as you said, there are three parts of a bird that may require grooming. Let's start with the wings and wing clipping. This can be quite a controversial subject. So, first of all, Scott, explain what clipping means and what it is that's being clipped.
Okay, you're absolutely right. It is controversial because there's many different types of wing clips. And when we talk about that, we're trimming feathers. We're talking about with pet birds actually cutting certain feathers to limit flight.
Right, so we're not talking about a permanent treatment. We're just talking about cutting the ends off flight feathers. So, Scott, could you please give me an overview of the pros and the cons of trimming feathers?
Okay, so let's start with what wing trims are supposed to accomplish, and that is to limit flight. That is not to stop flight. It is to help the bird glide down to the ground in a controlled manner, as opposed to completely eliminating flight, where in which if the bird were to jump off of a perch, it would literally fall on the ground and just hit the ground. And that's a very important factor because a lot of wing trims I see not only completely stop flight, but they create abnormal falls. So for example, this is probably the most obvious, is when you trim one wing and leave the other one normal, it very much so imbalances that bird. And of course, the bird's going to flutter, and that in turn twists the body, and it can hit on its head, hit on its back, hit on its belly, and that would be a very abnormal wing trim.
So a good trim will still allow some flight, unlike pinioning, which stops flight altogether.
Exactly. So again, the pro, to go back to your question, the purpose is to limit flight in a controlled manner such that the bird can jump from a higher point and land safely at a lower point. That is the purpose. You can use this for training purposes. You can help keep a bird into a single area, a room, so forth. If you were to take your bird outside, you can limit flight out there. So there are a lot of reasons that people would trim a bird. Now let's go into the cons and the adverse effects of that. First of all, when you trim a bird, again, if you create too much of a trim such that the bird falls and crashes, it can hurt itself. And there's two main things that we see. There's physical trauma, and that's where the bird literally lands on its keel bone and breaks its skin or damages its bone or bruises elsewhere in the body. And there's also psychological trauma. We can actually create a lot of trauma, again, physical and psychological, with a bad wing trim. And that's why I'm so adamant that we do this properly and not create this kind of state where we're getting this bird hurting itself, and getting scared more and more. And again, a vicious cycle can ensue. And that's the problem we deal with.
Scott, these bad trims that you're talking about, have they normally been given by a caregiver trying to do a trim at home and not having the experience to do it properly?
Well, I would say that anybody can do a bad trim. And that includes me. When I first started out, I think I did some bad trims. So it's not limited to bird owners. Veterinarians and professionals do bad wing trims. In fact, I see them on somewhat of a regular basis.
Scott, I know some of the problems you see with bad trims are the result of people either taking too much off of a feather or taking off the wrong feathers altogether. So perhaps it might be worthwhile here just to reflect a little bit on the anatomy of a bird's wing.
The wing is basically, if you break it out into kind of three zones, there is the humerus, which is your arm bone. If you just think about your own arm, that's where your bicep muscle is. That's where the humerus is. And then you have the forewing, or your forearm. That's the area between your elbow and your wrist. And then you have the wrist through your fingers. So the humerus area is where your tertiary feathers come off of. That area between the elbow and the wrist is where your secondary feathers come off of. And the area from your wrist to your fingers is where your primaries come off of.
Right.
Now, the important thing is the primaries, again, more or less the bird's hand, the primaries provide the thrust of flight. Those secondaries are more of your stabilization type feathers. They provide an airfoil for maintaining sustained flight and so forth. Those tertiaries, depending on the bird species, may help protect the feathers, protect the secondaries. They may provide a little bit of air surface, but they have very little to do with flight. So we're primarily dealing with those primaries and secondaries.
So those are the feather groups, Scott. Can you give me some idea of how much of the feather we should be removing when we're doing a trim?
Sure, and these are guidelines only, but if we break parrot species into two rough groups, we can divide them into long-tailed birds and short-tailed birds. So let me give you an example. An Indian ringneck parakeet is a long-tailed bird.
Sure.
A cockatiel is a long-tailed bird. A macaw, long-tailed bird.
Yeah.
A green-cheeked conure is a short-tailed bird. All Amazons, short-tailed birds. So in general, the shorter the tail, the more feathers we're going to leave for that bird, because those short-tailed birds are more fast flapping type birds. And if you cut away that feather, the thrust feathers off the basically the hand of the bird, they have a greater risk of falling and injuring themselves. If you look at the bird's wing, and again, we're talking about those outer five or six feathers, okay? Measure the distance from the end of that primary feather, where it sticks out, and up to the point where the covert covers the feather. Okay,
Right.
so you have the visible portion of that feather. Okay, roughly we're going to cut a little bit more than half of that visible feather. Okay, again, five or six feathers on long-tailed birds, and roughly we're going to leave a little bit more than half of that distance for short-tailed birds. Does that make
Right.
sense?
Yes, it does. So if you have a macaw or a parakeet with a long tail, you need to remove slightly more than half, working back from the tip of the feather back towards the wing. You remove half, over half of the feather. If you
Yes.
have a short-tailed bird like an Amazon, then working back again from the tip of the feather back towards the wing, you leave more than half of that feather.
Exactly. And you know what? If you test your bird and the bird can still fly, trim a little bit more. You can always trim a little bit more, but once you cut away the feather, you can't add it back. So
But like a haircut, it will go back one day,
that's right.
hopefully.
Exactly.
I gather, Scott, there's a problem specifically relating to the outer two primary feathers if you leave too much of them left.
The problem is that some birds can literally fly with those outer two primaries because that's where the vast majority of that thrust comes from.
Presumably that means, therefore, Scott, that even after a bird's wing's been trimmed, an owner still needs to take precautions if they, for example, are going to take the bird outside.
Always take precautions. So after a wing trim, I give the birds a little test. I like to see, unless we already know the bird, but I like to give the bird a little test where we have it kind of fly to the ground. And what I'm looking for is to make sure the bird cannot gain altitude. Now, that doesn't mean that a bird could go home and maybe a new feather starts to grow in and it has more surface area and more thrust from that feather and they can learn to fly. So we're very careful. You hear the stories about birds going outside after a wing trim and a gust of wind takes them away. Well, with the right conditions, even with a short wing trim, a bird can gain altitude. So we always use precautions if we're dealing with birds that are outside. And some birds, of course, are flighted and are trained to fly outside. And that's a totally different subject. But the average bird owner that has not trained their bird to fly, yes, we use precautions even after wing trims.
Right. And Scott, can a bad wing trim cause permanent damage in any way?
They can because what sometimes happens, if the wing trim is too short and too damaging and the bird crashes, imagine impacting that wing stump right into the base of the feather. They can sometimes even damage the bone, the structure that they're attached to, and it can actually cause permanent misgrowth where we get abnormal feather growth or non-growth where the feathers actually don't ever grow again. So it is a very important procedure. And I think we say all this is an easy thing, just take a pair of scissors, cut it, and you're done. It's not always like that.
Presumably, then you would recommend trimming always be done by a professional.
Absolutely. Someone who knows what they're doing. Again, that's not necessarily a veterinarian because anybody can learn the proper process, but absolutely, you can cause more damage than good with a poor wing trim.
With all this talk of potential problems, Scott, we should just stress that cutting a bird's feather in itself doesn't cause the bird any distress. There's no pain for the bird in having a feather trimmed.
No, and a mature feather has no blood or nerve supply and is not painful. The bird may not like it, but it's not a painful procedure.
Sure. And Scott, how fast would you expect a trimmed feather to be replaced, or does that vary across the species?
It varies across the species. It also varies in how the birds are kept, meaning indoors versus outdoors, and the latitude of where they're kept as well. One thing I commonly see is that indoor pet birds, not exposed to natural patterns outside, typically have no season in terms of feather growth, and they often have a more continuous random molt. So that means that we may have feathers molting on a regular basis here and there at all times. And that's not necessarily abnormal, it's just a factor of how the bird is being kept.
Right.
In general, I tell people expect a full molt twice a year. Some birds don't molt that often, some birds molt much more frequently.
Scott, before we leave trimming, one final question. Is there any reasons to or not to trim a young bird's wings?
That's a very good question. Again, you're going to hear some controversy on this. My recommendation is to allow a bird at a young age to learn to fly. And this would be ideally done at the breeder's place before it is released. But you can also do it at home if you have a young bird. I like to at least let them to learn that skill, allow them to learn that skill, because later in life, if a bird has always been trimmed from a young age, it oftentimes never learns to fly. And it's a good skill to have. It's a natural, normal skill.
And presumably, Scott, it's important to let a young bird fly because it helps exercise the muscles, it helps the skeleton develop properly.
That's a very good point. Absolutely. You need to develop you're developing nerves, you're developing muscle, developing bone, all those things. So I agree with you absolutely. There's many reasons to allow that skill to develop.
Thanks, Scott. Great information as always. Can we turn now from feathers to looking at a parrot's nails? Because when we're talking about feet, it's obviously the nails that we're thinking of in terms of grooming. When would a parrot's nails be considered too long and in need of a trim?
That's a great question. So there's a couple ways you can look at that and determine, is my parrot's nail too long? One simple method is if you think of the nail as in a turn of a circle. Okay, so the nail should be roughly 1/4 of a turn. When the nail is a full half circle, that's obviously too long, and sometimes we see them go even further. Another method is if you let the bird stand flat or stand on a flat surface, and you look at the toes should be flat. If the nail is too long, it will literally push up the end of the toe off that flat surface. So those are two quick and easy methods you can look and say, all right, is my bird's nail too long? And it's interesting in the wild, I mean, I've worked with a lot of wild parrots, and their nails are sharp, but you just don't see them get too long.
I'm assuming, therefore, that a wild bird's nails are naturally filed down as they forage or climb trees.
Absolutely. You're seeing birds out there. Some of them dig up things out of the ground. They scratch at trees, maybe looking for bugs and other things we wouldn't even necessarily consider as food. So they're working their feet every single day, and that is providing for normal nail health. And that is one of the reasons that we have to trim birds' nails in captivities because they're not oftentimes given those opportunities, or they never learned to do it in the first place from a young age.
So having said that, Scott, are there things that we can do or are there products that we can use, such as cement or sandpaper purchase, that would help keep a parrot's nails naturally filed?
Yes, there's a couple things. One is having physical space. So the larger the physical space, the more the bird is going to move around, and that's where you add in foraging devices, multiple feeding stations, multiple toy stations. So we're forcing the bird to climb around. Just being physically active in part helps keep the nails shortened. Another one is, yes, these concrete perches can help that with some degree, but you know, if you have a bird in a small cage on a single concrete perch, that's probably not going to keep the nail short. Again, the bird needs to be physically active. Now, I should differentiate between the types of sandpaper perches. There is the sand-covered perch, and that is the solid perch that has kind of a gritty texture. Those are okay. Sandpaper-covered perches, I do not recommend. And what they do is they take a roll of sandpaper and roll it onto a dowel rod. The problem is these are unstable, and also they tend to provide a perfectly symmetrical perch. And if you think of a bird placing their weight on a perch and it has the exact same diameter, what it does is it wears a sore spot on the foot in the exact same location every time it steps. So we want differential sizes of those perches. It's better to have multiple diameter perches rather than a single perch. And typically those sandpaper covered perches are, again, that dowel rod is just a perfectly round shape, and that sandpaper is also loose, so it's not secured and the birds can fall from it. So I do not recommend sandpaper perches.
Well, that's a really interesting point, Scott. So let's assume now, though, that we have our long nails. They need to be trimmed. We do have to be much more careful here than when we're trimming a feather, don't we? Because unlike a feather, a nail has a blood supply.
Yes. So let's start with the simple ways. First, again, we have the non-invasive methods, the passive nail trim, and that is having physical space, letting your bird be active, having these multiple diameter perches with the rough coatings. Those are all good. Now let's go into the active methods of nail trimmings. The first one is if your bird is comfortable with you handling it, just simply file its nail. You know, with a nail file, we're not going to be worried about filing it so much. You'd have to be very vigorous to, you know, damage that nail and get to the blood supply. So that's an easy one. Now, the next ones, it will require that you understand that anatomy of the nail. I said we want to look for about a quarter turn of that nail. Well, that does not necessarily mean that the blood supply stops before that quarter turn, because sometimes the blood supply extends beyond that, and that's just, again, going to depend on the individual bird. But some birds with a clear nail, you can literally see the blood supply in there. And you can also take a light behind the nail, and you may be able to illuminate that blood supply and avoid it. If you can't see it, as the case with a black nail, what you want to do is trim little by little. You can take literally human nail clippers, if you use those, clip a little bit at a time. The good news is the nerve endings stop before the blood supply does. So in other words, you're going to hit blood before you hit the nerves.
Right.
And that's good. So if you're trimming just a little bit at a time and you get just a spot of blood, that's okay. You're not necessarily going to hurt the bird. Just stop there. And there are a number of products that you can use. One's called Quick Stop Powder. There's several other powders that you can apply to the end of the nail to stop the bleeding. If you don't have any of those products, use flour or cornstarch.
Okay? Right.
They're just going to, very simple stuff. There are several methods beyond using just little nail clippers. Okay, one is called the Dremel tool. People are that familiar with that rotating tool. And the Dremel tool has advantages and disadvantages. The advantage is that you can Dremel it and cauterize at the same time. It does create heat, so too much of that can be a problem. The downsides are you can over-trim the nails pretty easily with those. You can also frighten the bird. So another one is there's a heat loop tool that's out there that's a little pin type instrument. It has a loop on the end. It just cuts through the nail like butter, and those work really well also. Again, the same thing is if you go too high up on the nail, you can induce pain. And the nice thing is it doesn't make any noise, so birds tend to tolerate it very well.
Right. And can a nail trim be given at home by the caregiver, or would you normally recommend bringing in a professional?
Well, okay, the simple things, the passive ones, obviously that's done within your house, and the nail file, sure, you can do that at home. I think that's perfectly fine to do. I think what a lot of people do is they have a hard time kind of figuring out how to handle the bird and trim its nail without causing any damage, and absolutely get a professional's help, because you don't want to be in a situation where you're tackling your bird, you know, holding it down and everybody's screaming. You don't want that situation. So
it's very stressful for everybody concerned.
That's right. And someone who's very comfortable with a nail trim and knows it, the bird's going to know that as well. And good nail trim, and same thing with a wing trim, is done in a very calm manner. And there's not kicking and screaming involved. And that's ideal, you know, and the bird just lays there and lets you do the procedure. You know, I can tell you right here and now, your bird, when it goes in for a wing trim and a nail trim, it should not be a fight.
Excellent. And Scott, how often do the nails need to typically be trimmed in a captive bird?
Well, again, highly variable between the species and depends on the nutrition, activity level. I would say that, and some things, there are some disease states where it actually overgrows. And, you know, it is variable. I'd love to say, you know, on average, 2 to 3 times a year. It is so variable between the species that I can't even tell you that.
Right. So once again, it's down to the individual, the state of health of that bird, the conditions that it's kept in, those kind of things.
Absolutely.
Right, Scott, thank you very much for that. If we can now turn to our third part of the bird, as it were, the beak. I'm assuming you're going to say it's down to the individual again, but how quickly does a bird's beak grow?
Well, it does depend on the individual, as you suggested. We also don't know that information for most birds. So there are a few species that we do know. So, for example, in some of the larger macaws, it is estimated that it takes 6 months for the beak. We're talking about the upper beak, too. The beak to grow from the base, which is basically where the nares are, all the way to the tip. My experience is it can be much longer than that, actually, in some birds. So it is variable, and also, we, for whatever reason, we see more reflections of disease in the beak than we do in the nails. And A classic example is cytisine beak and feather disease, which is now endemic in Australia. And I have seen, of course, cockatoos in Australia with abnormal beaks.
I have too, Scott. It's a distressing thing to see, actually, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And also, there are a number of toxins that have been associated with abnormal beak growth. And then liver disease is another one that we will see abnormally long beaks with. And that does occur in the wild. And aside from that, there's also mechanical abnormalities where the beak scissors, the scissors beak, where it does not appropriately occlude. And then you get some overgrowth that way as well. So those can occur naturally.
Scott, unlike, say, overgrown nails, I would imagine that an overgrown beak can cause some severe health challenges for a bird.
Yes, obviously, what ultimately can happen is the bird cannot eat.
Right, and obviously, for that to happen, the beak has to be excessively overgrown. Can you tell me, Scott, before that happens, at what point can an owner determine that a beak is on its way to becoming excessively overgrown?
That's a good question, and that's sometimes hard to answer because of the variability in beak structure, normal beak structure of birds. What I used when I was first learning this was pictures of what appeared to be normal birds. And I used that as a guideline. And I'm going to give you an example. If you look at, say, a macaw, they typically have a very long upper beak, and that's normal. Okay, but if you look at, say, a green cheek conure, it's going to have a relatively short and blunt beak, as opposed to a blue crown conure that has a very long and pointed beak. And then we have the slender billed cockatoo, and we have so many variations that it's important to understand what is normal for that species. So before we decide, oh, this is overgrown, we need to trim it, let's first determine maybe this is just normal for that species.
So you're suggesting that either owners speak to other owners of the same species, or perhaps they just look on the internet?
Exactly. How many times you can hear a veterinarian say, go to the internet? But I'm saying, go to the internet, get some pictures, take a look at it, and see, is that normal? And, so again, we don't want to do a procedure on the beak, especially, and we'll get to that in a moment, unless we have to.
Well, let's get straight to that, Scott. If a parrot's beak does need to be trimmed, and we're normally talking here because the tip has overgrown, can an owner do that at home, or would you always recommend a professional do a procedure like that?
Okay, first and foremost, always have someone who is familiar with beak anatomy, a professional, do a beak trim. The end of the beak, the purpose of that is for fine tactile, touch, manipulation, grooming. Think about that bird that is delicately grooming its mate, going through feathers very finely. They're using the tip of the beak. That tip of the beak also has a very rich nerve supply. It's specifically called the bill tip organ. So when we talk about trimming that, we're talking about cutting that nerve ending, and it's very painful. I mean, anybody who's ever watched their bird get a beak trim, they know birds hate it. The insensitive portion of the beak is on the underside of the upper portion of the beak. The rest of the beak, it's got a nerve supply, it's got a blood supply. If you go deep enough, you'll hit the blood supply. There's underlying bone. You can actually cause a lot of pain. We even see it with young birds that are kind of clumsy and they break off that tip of that end of the beak. It's painful. They oftentimes don't eat for a few days. They just kind of mope around. It's because they hurt. And then the next part is understanding beak anatomy is very important. So if you have a scissored beak, a twisted beak, or others, you can make the beak worse. You can make that scissoring worse. You can make the problem worse with an improper beak trim. And this is where the professional who's doing the beak trim really needs to understand the anatomy, the physiology of that beak, so that when they trim it and after they've trimmed it, it's going to make the problem better and not worse. So you can actually make it worse with a poor beak trim.
Sounds like very specialist work, Scott. Are all avian vets able to work on the beak?
Ones that have been trained in it, yes. Honestly, I don't have a problem with clients learning how to do wing trims and nail trims. I do not recommend that people do beak trims without good education on the subject.
Scott, when we were talking about the nails, we were saying there were products available that would help the bird naturally trim its nails. Mm-hmm. Are the products available so that a bird can keep its beak naturally trimmed?
Absolutely. And we're going to go back to those passive items, and that is going to be physical exercise, activity within the cage, climbing around, chewing on toys. Destructible toys are perfect, especially untreated wood. That's a great toy for the bird to chew on, and that's a good example. In fact, some birds will get an overgrowth of the beak if they do not chew and physically exercise their beak. So sometimes we just have to look at the bird and say, all right, this is not an issue where it needs a beak trim. It needs physical exercise and activity.
So as ever with parrot welfare, there really isn't a single one-size-fits-all solution. And it's worth again stressing to parrot owners that if their bird develops an overgrown beak, it could be for a number of underlying health reasons, which again, I guess, is another reason why you would suggest that owners seeing this develop should always take their bird to be seen by a professional.
Absolutely, yes. The beak issues are a little more complicated than nails and wings. And absolutely, if I could say it again, please have someone who's familiar with beak anatomy and physiology perform the necessary procedure.
Right. Thank you, Scott. An absolute wealth of information as ever. And it's worth pointing out that you've recently released a third in your series of bird care DVDs. And this third one does look at some length at grooming, doesn't it?
Yes. And actually, Dr. Lori Hess covers a lot of what we've discussed, but in a visual presentation. And so this will include nail trims, discussion a little bit on beak trims, and then also wing trims and how to actually perform these properly.
Excellent. So have a listen to the podcast and then have a look at the DVD to see how you should be doing all these things.
All right. Great. Well, thank you.
Scott, Dr. Scott Eccles, once again, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day to join me here on the Parrot Care Sessions.
All right. Thanks. You have a great day.
For more information on Dr. Eccles and his work, please have a look at his website at www.avianstudios.com. For more information about parrots and current conservation efforts, please visit the World Parrot Trust on the web at www.parrots.org, where you can also find more interviews like this one with Dr. Eccles and others by navigating to parrots.org/learn. Finally, for more information about me, Charlie Moores, please visit my website at www.talking-naturally.co.uk. Thank you.